Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Framed ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Previously on Framed.
Did you take the garbage out that night?
Me and a couple other guys.
Did you usually take the garbage out yourself?
No, it was always me and another guy. I could never lift one by myself.
Were there two other boys standing near Mario and Brian when they were arguing?
Yes, they were behind him. I couldn't make out who they were. I think they may have been the stock boys that worked there that night.
Here's the thing, Rob. We have a circle, and we have Brian's physical evidence in there, and we have your physical evidence in there, right? You got this small little area. You got your DNA and his DNA in there, okay? Rob, there's only a couple of answers that it could possibly be at this point. Either both of you were injured by someone, or you injured one another.
Greetings. This is your host, Aaron. On this episode of Framed, we're finally going to cover the testimony of Shane Lamb in greater detail. The reason I say finally is because Shane was one of the first witnesses to testify at the trial, and he was, without question, the most important witness for the state's case against Mario. Nearly every news article that's been written on this topic since 2010 has mentioned Shane Lamb, which tells you, at the very least, his story was sensational. There are a few reasons we waited until now to get to Shane. First and foremost, our approach to solving this mystery has been to piece together Brian's day through the stories of the people who were working at Val's on the night of December 20th, 2002, and Shane Lamb wasn't working that night. Another reason we've waited is because Shane has given two vastly different accounts of what happened. At times, Shane has denied having any involvement in Brian's death, and at other times, Shane has admitted to killing Brian with his own hands. Trying to figure out which one of these versions is the truthful one should be easier now that we have established some baseline facts to check Shane's stories against. Here's what we've learned so far from the witnesses who were working that night. We know Brian entered Val's Foods through the front entrance around 6:45 p.m., and by 7 p.m., he was dead. We know that during those 15 minutes, Mario was sharing a pizza with some co-workers in the break room. At some point, Peter DiPiero witnessed Brian engaged in an argument outside the southeast exit door while the stock boys were taking out the garbage. We know Rob Render was one of the stock boys who took out the garbage that night. Therefore, he was present for the argument Pete witnessed, if not directly involved. We also know that Rob's blood was found at the scene of the crime in close proximity to Brian's blood. As Detective Von Allman put it, the blood evidence suggests that there was either a physical conflict between the two of them, or Brian and Rob were injured by someone else. The only person that would make sense, the only person that had the motive and opportunity to harm both Brian and Rob, would have been Shane Lamb. If Rob owed Brian money, and he in turn owed Mario money, that means that ultimately they both owed Mario money. If Shane's job was to collect any and all debts that were owed to Mario, it's possible Shane was called in to collect from both of them. So what exactly did Shane testify to at Mario's trial?
State your name.
Shane Lamb.
Have you ever been to prison, Shane?
Yes.
How many times?
5.
For what?
Aggravated batteries and cocaine.
Now, you are testifying under an agreement with the state's attorney's office, is that correct?
Yes.
Tell these people what the agreement is.
In exchange for my truthful testimony, I get, I'm not getting any charges related to this case.
All right. Let's talk about it, Shane. Who is Brian Carrick?
I worked with him at Val's.
Did Mario Cachero work at Val's Foods?
Yes.
All right. You got your check there on Friday?
Yeah.
And did you go there to cash your check?
Yes.
What time did you cash your check, Shane?
Probably like around 4 o'clock. I don't really remember.
When you went to Val's to cash your check, did you have a conversation with Mario Cachero about Brian Carrick owing him money?
Yes.
Tell us about this conversation with the defendant, Mario Cachero.
Brian had cashed his check and he hadn't paid him.
How did you know that?
Because I talked to Mario when I went to the store.
What did you do next?
Me and my buddies went out to another friend's house and started drinking.
Drinking alcohol?
Yes.
Did you do any other drugs?
I was probably smoking some weed.
All right, what if anything happens next?
We were drinking for a while. Then I got a phone call from Mario telling me to come talk to Brian at the store.
All right. And what were you supposed to talk to Brian about?
The money that he owed Mario.
Why did you agree to go talk to Brian about the money Brian owed Mario?
Because if he would not have paid back that money, Mario would have quit fronting me weed.
So, did you go back to Val's?
Yes.
All right. What time did you get to Val's?
Around 6:45.
What happened when you got to Val's?
I walked around until I found them, Mario and Brian, in the produce section, like where they chop up vegetables and stuff.
And what were Mario and Brian doing when you found them?
They were talking about the money, arguing about it.
What happened next? What did you do?
I started arguing with Brian about it, and things got kind of loud. So Mario said, he's like, there are customers outside. Go in the cooler.
All right, now when this was going on, where specifically were you within Val's?
In the little produce room.
Mario says there's customers?
Right.
All right, so what did you do?
We were in the middle of arguing. I kind of pushed him by his face, like muffed him back into the cooler.
You pushed Brian Carrick by his face?
Yeah.
And you shoved Brian Carrick in the produce room?
Yeah.
Okay, what did Mario do when you were doing this?
He was behind me.
And what happened next?
We started arguing in the produce cooler.
You and Brian?
Yeah.
And where was Mario when this was going on?
Right behind me.
Was Mario doing anything?
No.
All right, was Mario saying anything?
No, I was arguing with Brian.
Okay, and what happens next?
I lost my temper and hit him, and he fell down.
You lost your temper?
Yeah.
Why did you lose your temper, Shane?
Because we were arguing.
So you hit him?
Yeah.
How many times?
I swung twice. I know I connected the first time.
So what happened to Brian Carrick?
I thought I knocked him out.
Why do you say that?
Because he fell backwards, straight into the produce cooler.
Did you see where he landed?
Right in front of me, and just straight back.
What happened next?
Mario told me to get out of the store.
And what did you do?
I walked out through the cooler door, back around by, like, the break room, and came out those doors.
And then what happened?
I left.
What happened when you, as you were leaving, did you see anybody back there?
I seen Rob Render working. Mario came out. When I was at the end of the hall, I looked back. I seen him and Rob talking.
You saw who and Rob talking?
Mario and Rob.
Okay. Where did you go after you left the store?
I went back to the party.
So that was Shane's testimony in a nutshell. His immunity deal contained a stipulation that if he didn't provide truthful information, the deal would be null and void. It was within the state's power to reject Shane's story as fiction, but they chose not to. They accepted it as true, even though everything they had learned over the course of a 7-year investigation told them Shane was lying. For starters, we know that when Brian returned to the store at 6:45, he went straight to the break room where he found Mario, Eddie, and Lauren. Brian asked where Rob was, and then left. 5 witnesses told us Mario stayed in the break room until 7 p.m., yet Shane testified that when he arrived at Val's at 6:45, he found Mario and Brian arguing in the produce prep room. Shane's story, right from the start, is in conflict with the known facts. There's also no mention of Rob being present in the cooler when this altercation occurred.
And Render is not present, according to you, at the time that you get into the fight. Or not a fight. That you strike Brian, according to you.
Yes.
Yes, Render is not there, correct?
He's in the store, but not...
Yeah, he's not part of this.
Right.
Shane does mention that as he was exiting the store through the loading dock, he saw Mario talking to Rob. Mario's attorney had a theory about why Shane mentioned seeing Rob as he was leaving. He shared that theory with the jury during closing arguments.
Shane says he goes around the corner, down the other hall, and sees Rob on the other side of the store, and Rob and Mario are talking. That's the only thing he ever says about Rob. I suggest to you that that's not true either, because he knows Rob's blood is at the scene, and somehow he's got to, like, throw that part in, so something makes some semblance of making sense.
This scenario Shane laid out defies logic. The very first thing Mario does after Brian is killed is he sends Shane away, and the second thing he does, before Shane can even leave the store, is recruit Rob Render to help him? Shane's this big, burly guy who is motivated to help cover this up and keep quiet. Rob is half the size of Shane and would have no reason to help get rid of Brian's body or keep quiet about it. Mario's attorney's theory seems to make more sense. Shane just threw that detail in about Rob so the state could say this in their closing arguments.
Now, did Rob Render have a role in mopping up or hustling Brian Carrick's unconscious, lifeless, or woozy body out of the back of that store? Maybe. We know that Shane Lamb said that as he was leaving, he saw Mario motion to Rob. And keep in mind, after Shane Lamb knocks Brian Carrick out, he may not know immediately that he's dead. You have Rob Render mop up while I take Brian Carrick out of the back door.
To accept Shane's story as true, you have to believe it was just a coincidence that Rob's blood was found on both the cooler door handles, on the interior door jamb, and on the southeast exit door. There was also no physical evidence implicating Shane or Mario. No blood, no fingerprints, no hair, or a single speck of DNA could be positively identified as belonging to Shane Lamb or Mario Cachero. The physical evidence that was found proves Shane's story was fabricated.
You didn't see much blood, right?
No.
No, there was not much blood?
Well, there was blood, but not a lot.
Just some coming out of his nose.
Maybe his nose and mouth?
The next morning, there were literally liters of Brian's blood found on the cooler floor, and that was after the cooler had been mopped up the night before. Shane's testimony doesn't explain why so much blood was found in the cooler days later. It also doesn't explain why Brian's blood was found outside of the cooler.
Well, let's break it down. Whether you pushed, muffed, hit, threw, tossed, whatever you said you did, that occurred in the produce cooler.
Yes.
And you struck him between 1 and 5 times, depending upon which of your stories were to believe, in the produce cooler.
Yes.
Nothing happened in the hallway?
No.
Zip?
No.
You're sure of that?
Yes.
If the entire altercation with Brian happened inside the cooler, why were there 20 bloodstains on the back hallway wall in a spatter pattern? The phone records don't support Shane's testimony either. Shane testified that the reason he came back to the store that night was because Mario called him. Mario's phone records were obtained by the authorities and submitted as evidence at the trial.
It is hereby stipulated that pursuant to subpoena and tendered in the discovery process that Nextel phone records for Mario Cachero's telephone number were put into the listing by who is now Chief Von Allman. There is a further stipulation that no phone calls or Nextel direct chirps were made from Mario Cachero's phone to any phone number listed to be Shane Lamb's or any of Shane Lamb's family members.
So stipulated?
Oh, yes, Judge. I signed the document. I'm sorry. Yes.
The phone records showed that Mario never called or texted or contacted Shane in any way that night. Clearly, there were some problems with Shane's testimony. The state had to do some cleanup during their closing arguments to address some of these problems.
If Shane Lamb could say anything, why does he point the finger at himself? He could have told us that he killed Brian Carrick and he threw his body in the Great Lakes. He could have told us that Lauren, Jacob, Pete, Jimmy Hoffa, President Obama killed Brian Carrick, and he would still have had immunity on the murder and 6 years on the drug charges. So now, Shane Lamb, for the rest of his life, in the eyes of his family and his friends, will be forever known as the guy that killed Brian Carrick. And why would he do that to himself when he doesn't have to?
It's a compelling argument, but the state wasn't going to accept just any story Shane told them. The state's attorneys had already made up their minds what the truth was, and Shane knew exactly what they wanted to hear. We need to take a moment for our sponsor, Third Love. Using thousands of real women's measurements, Third Love designs its bras with breast size and shape in mind so that they fit impeccably and feel even better. Third Love just added 24 new sizes, making them the industry leader with a total of 70 sizes. And for those of you who have always struggled to find one that fit you just right, Third Love even offers half-cup sizes. With ultra-smoothing fabrics, straps that won't slip, and lightweight super-thin memory foam cups, Third Love is hands down the most comfortable bra you'll own. So skip the trip to the store. Find your fit in 60 seconds online using the Fit Finder quiz, order, and try one on at home. Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone, so right now they are offering my listeners 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/framed now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/framed for 15% off today.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Remember back in episode 1 when we covered Mario's grand jury testimony from 2007? They asked Mario this.
Did you get into an argument with Brian Carrick outside the produce cooler on December 20th of 2002?
No.
Did you tell Brian that he had to give you your money?
No.
Were you present when Shane Lamb started striking Brian Carrick?
No.
Do you know that Shane Lamb was fighting Brian Carrick in order to get you your money?
No.
In 2007, the state had no eyewitnesses. They had no forensic evidence linking Mario or Shane to the crime scene. But it's pretty clear, based on their line of questioning with Mario, that their theory of the crime was fully formed. They weren't getting their information from Shane because he didn't tell his story until 2010, after he received his immunity deal. So where was the state getting their information from? Well, Shane Lamb wasn't the first person to cut a deal in this case. One of Mario's friends was arrested on January 19, 2007, in Johnsburg, Illinois. He was arrested for driving under the influence. It was his second such offense in as many years. While in custody for the DUI, he claimed to have information on the Carrick murder case. Just a few weeks ago, this witness we're discussing, Alan Lippert, passed away. He was 35 years old. Our hearts go out to Alan's loved ones as they grieve over this loss. His death was a tragedy, as is any loss of life. Alan's passing gave us pause and compelled us to re-examine the episode's content. As we did, we realized there's no easy way to proceed here. In the same way we can't tell this story without discussing uncomfortable facts about Rob Render, we can't tell this story without discussing Alan's part in it. We realize some of these details we're going to cover will be difficult for some to hear, but ultimately, Alan's passing hasn't changed anything in our analysis. In order to accomplish what we've set out to do, which is getting to the whole truth in this case, and providing some justice for Brian, we've decided to carry on. Alan testified to the following at Mario's trial.
State your name, sir.
Alan Lippert.
Would you consider yourself to be at this time again back in 2002? Were you close friends with Mario?
Yes.
Are you friends with Mario anymore?
No.
All right, Alan, I want to direct your attention to the fall of 2006, sometime around Halloween, okay?
Okay.
You know what I'm referring to. You have an occasion to be with Mario and Steve on one evening in the fall of 2006.
Yes.
Okay, and tell the ladies and gentlemen of the jury about that. Where did the three of you go?
We met up at Halftime's Bar in Johnsburg. We had a few drinks, and then we went to another bar, Pug Mahone's in Fox Lake.
All right, what happened after the bar closed?
We went home.
At some point, did you guys drop off Steve?
Yeah, he was dropped off before I was.
Did you have a conversation after Steve was dropped off with Mario about the Brian Carrick disappearance?
Yes.
All right, who initiated this conversation?
I believe I did. It started with talking about Shane Lamb.
All right, tell the jury about this conversation.
We were talking about Shane, and then I brought up, I believe what I said was, I know you told Shane to kill Brian Carrick.
And what was Mario's response to that?
He said, oh, no, it wasn't even like that.
And then what did you say?
And then I asked him what he meant. And then by that time, we got to my house, and we got on my car, and we both sat alongside the car. And he said that Shane basically was just meant to threaten Brian, but it turned out to be some kind of accident, that things got out of hand.
All right, tell the jury here about the rest of this conversation between you and Mario.
Just that Shane or that, yeah. Shane was just supposed to threaten Brian, but it was an accident. Things got out of hand. And then I guess supposedly that the body eventually was moved locally out of Val's to then a river in Iowa.
And did Mario say who moved the body?
First he brought up relatives, but then I think he said Shane Lamb.
You think? You don't know?
I don't know for sure. I don't remember. No.
When you say relatives, can you be more specific?
Family.
Okay, I just need you. What were Mario's words? You've got to be clear about that.
I believe it was cousins.
Now, at this point, did you tell this to law enforcement?
I would say a few months later.
Now, sometime after this, you were arrested, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, and what were you arrested for?
Driving under the influence.
Okay, and I just want to talk to you briefly about that case, DUI. Was that case prosecuted by the state's attorney's office?
I believe so.
Okay, it wasn't a village prosecutor for Johnsburg?
No.
Alan was asked the following during the cross-examination.
So it's clear, you're in custody of the Johnsburg police on a DUI, correct?
Correct.
And you know you're in trouble, correct?
At the moment?
Because you've got, well, not now, when you got the DUI.
Well, I mean, I was accused of driving under the influence.
So that's the night you decide to tell the story, correct?
Correct.
The DUI got dropped?
No.
Dismissed?
No.
Reduced?
Yes.
The suspension of your license got rescinded, which is gone, eliminated?
Yes.
You had up to 12 beers and 2 shots that night. Isn't that true?
Around that, yes.
Alan testified that he had this conversation with Mario in October of 2006, but he didn't say anything to the police until January of 2007. When he did come forward, he wasn't doing it to clear his conscience. He was looking to get a deal to lessen his DUI charges. Incredibly, it worked. He received some minor legal considerations in exchange for his cooperation. Had Alan strolled into the Johnsburg police station soon after this conversation with Mario, and he wasn't looking for favors, it would have been much easier to believe him. Instead, it just looks as though he made up a story to get out of the trouble he was in. Even if Alan talked to Mario about the carrot case, as he claimed, he said he was heavily intoxicated when this conversation occurred. Given his inebriated state, both when he spoke to Mario and when he relayed his story later to the police, can we really rely on any of this? Alan couldn't provide anything of substance to prove this conversation occurred, let alone anything that would prove Mario was involved in Brian's murder. The detectives knew they needed something to substantiate Alan's story, so they devised a plan. They put a wire on Alan and sent him back to talk to Mario. The state claimed their sting operation was successful, that they caught Mario admitting guilt. But there was a problem with the tapes. The tapes' contents were inaudible and garbled. When the state charged Mario with perjury, they tried to get the recordings admitted as evidence. The judge said if the tapes were inaudible, she would order the state to transcribe the contents of the recordings and provide a copy to Mario's attorney. The state objected to producing a transcription, so the tapes were ultimately deemed inadmissible. It seems odd that the state would object to having a transcription made. If they truly captured Mario saying something incriminating, why not write down what was said word for word? Even though those recordings never made it into the courtroom, it was still within the state's power to ask Alan what was discussed during these taped conversations. They chose not to do so. Detective Von Allman was listening in on the conversation when Alan was wearing the wire. They could have had Detective Von Allman testify to what he heard Mario say while the tape was running. But again, they chose not to do so. Between the state's refusal to transcribe the tape's contents and the fact that no one is willing to testify under oath about what was discussed during that conversation, we're led to believe that they didn't catch Mario saying anything incriminating on those tapes. If we could hear what was recorded ourselves, maybe our opinion would change. But as it stands, there's just nothing here that's convincing. When the state charged Mario with perjury, Alan Lippert and Pete DiPiero were their star witnesses. Pete's testimony at the perjury trial actually helped Mario, which meant the state was down to one witness. Alan was their entire case. That's why the judge threw out the perjury charges. Eventually, Alan was interviewed by the FBI, and they asked him about the night he spoke to Mario about the carrot case. It's one thing to spin a story to the Johnsburg Police Department, but sitting down with the FBI is a bit different. If you're caught lying to local law enforcement, not much can happen to you. If you're caught lying to the FBI, you're likely to face some serious charges. When Allen spoke to the FBI in 2008, his story changed. Allen vacillated between saying his previous statements were accurate and correct to saying that he had a lot to drink that night, and he wasn't so sure what was said. He told the FBI that the whole conversation seemed like a dream. He also told them that it was possible that he and Mario were simply talking about several theories they had heard from around town. So what should we make of Allen Lippert and his testimony? Did Mario confess that night? Or were Mario and Allen merely kicking around some theories about what they thought happened to Brian? Here's our take. Allen testified that he started this conversation with Mario by stating, "I know you told Shane to kill Brian Carrick." Now remember, this is the conversation where Allen supposedly learned about the details of Brian's death. He's going into the conversation with this very specific knowledge that Mario had Shane kill Brian. We know he didn't get those details from Mario, or else we would be hearing about another conversation that occurred prior to this one. So we have to ask ourselves, where did Allen get this theory from? If you remember back in episode 2, we covered the topic of motive. We learned that there were multiple witnesses who testified that Mario was selling drugs to Brian. There were multiple witnesses who testified that Shane Lamb was Mario's enforcer. If Allen was a friend of Mario's at the time, then he probably knew about Mario's drug ring, and he knew what Shane's role in it was. Armed with that information, Allen developed a working theory about what he thought happened. He probably walked around for years thinking Mario was involved in Brian's murder. One night, after some heavy drinking, Allen decided to confront Mario with his theory. He tells Mario,
"I know you told Shane to kill Brian Carrick."
According to Allen, Mario's response was,
"He said, oh no, it wasn't even like that."
What happened next was exactly what Allen told the FBI happened. Mario likely told Allen that he believed Shane Lamb killed Brian. How do we know this was Mario's theory? Because that's what he told the FBI when they interviewed him on December 18th of 2003. Mario told the FBI to look into Shane Lamb, and I quote, "because he is capable of doing something like this." So Allen is standing there, and this is a tense moment for him. He just accused a friend of participating in a murder, and then he hears Mario tell him that he believes Shane Lamb killed Brian. It's easy to see how under these circumstances, that when Allen heard Mario share his theory, he interpreted it as though Mario was admitting guilt, when in fact, he was just sharing his honest opinion about what he thought happened. So let's circle back to Shane Lamb now. The state asked the jury, if Shane had immunity and he could say anything, why point the finger at himself? Well, the truth is, the state had already made up their minds. There was only one version of the truth they were going to accept from Shane. Mario's attorney argued the following during his closing arguments.
"Keep in mind that Shane testifies in the grand jury the first time and denies everything. But the important part of that, and that's the reason why I read all the questions, is Shane is in the grand jury. Isn't it true that Mario told you to scare him? No. Isn't it true that Mario called you? No. Isn't it true that after Mario called, you went over there and saw Brian? No. Isn't it true that you got in an argument with Brian and lost your temper and hit him? No. Isn't it true that after that, Mario told you to leave? No." They're feeding him those questions, not improperly, and they didn't do anything wrong. But they're asking him because they have some belief, because of Allen's statement, that that is what happened. So Shane hears all those questions, denies all of those questions, gets himself in trouble, and is about to go bye-bye for 12 years, and they give him immunity. Give him nothing on the murder. And what does he say? You know what he says. "Yeah, Mario told me to scare him. Mario called me and told me to do it. I went over there, I lost my temper, I hit him, and I left." He says exactly the questions they asked him, that he denied at his last trip to the grand jury. But the truth is the truth is the truth.
This is a textbook example of how to contaminate a witness's testimony. They told Shane their entire theory of the crime when he testified before the grand jury. Shane knew exactly what the state's theory was when they offered him that deal. The problem with contaminated statements is you don't know if the witness has some independent knowledge of what they're saying, or if they're just reciting back the story they were told. We already went over some of the reasons we know Shane's testimony was false, but now we know where he got his story from. Alan was the first domino to fall for the state. Shane was the next to fall, but he wasn't the last.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
The next witness was only called to testify at Mario's first trial. The witness's name was John Nevitt. There was an article that appeared in a local newspaper, the Daily Herald, on January 27, 2012, while Mario's first trial was going on. Here's what the article said about John's testimony. Judge Prather allowed limited testimony from John Nevitt, 23, of McHenry. John, who was in jail awaiting trial on drug and burglary charges, testified that when he was 16 or 17 years old, he was partying in the woods with Shane Lamb and others. Shane admitted to having a role in Carrick's death. John Nevitt testified that he told me he was paid to scare the kid, and then he accidentally killed him. He told me he was supposed to scare Brian, and it got out of hand. The reason we know John's story is fake, the thing that gives him away, is his story was too similar to Alan's. 2 years before John testified, the following blurb appeared in an article in another local paper, the Northwest Herald. During Mario Cachero's trial in August, Alan Lippert, 26, testified that Mario told Shane Lamb to scare Brian, and things got out of hand. Alan testified that Mario said he had his relatives help move the body after the accident. So Alan testified that Shane was just meant to scare Brian, that things got out of hand, that it was an accident. Those were the words Alan used to describe what Mario told him. John testified that Shane was just meant to scare Brian, that things got out of hand, that it was an accident. Those were the words John used to describe what he claimed Shane told him. So what's more likely? Scenario 1, that Mario and Shane used the exact same phraseology when confessing to their friends. Or Scenario 2, that John Nevitt read a newspaper article covering Alan's testimony from Mario's perjury trial, and he decided to make up a story in an attempt to get a deal on his pending drug and burglary charges? We think Scenario 2 is more likely to be true. Another thing to consider, with the amount of deals the state was cutting in exchange for cooperation, why wouldn't criminals be chomping at the bit to offer up whatever story the state wanted to hear in hopes they would lessen their legal troubles? What's truly remarkable about John Nevitt's testimony is that the state let him on the stand in the first place. How much vetting of this guy did they actually do before deciding to call him as a witness? How many drunken felons looking for deals was the state willing to use to prosecute Mario? As it turns out, there was one more felon who testified for the state, and he got a deal as well. It's a witness we've already heard from earlier this season. Christopher Amen testified that he was dealing weed for Mario, and that Shane Lamb was Mario's enforcer. He also claimed to have obtained some incriminating information from Mario while they were drinking at a bar.
Okay, I want to direct your attention to approximately 5 years after Brian Carrick's disappearance, okay? Did you have an occasion to see Mario in a bar?
Yes, I did.
Who were you there with?
A group of people. I went with my girlfriend's brother, and Mario happened to be there.
All right. Did you have a conversation with Mario Cachero at this bar?
We had a conversation, yes.
All right. Tell the ladies and gentlemen about that.
Well, we were there for a short while, not a very long time. I was on one end of the bar, and there were some people in between us, and Mario was on the other end of the bar. We kind of already broken away from one another and weren't best of friends, but it seemed that every time we ran into one another, that one way or another, we'd be off in the corner chit-chatting by ourselves where nobody else could hear us. And that's what happened here. And, you know, eventually one of us made our way to the other end of the bar, and we stepped off, and we were chit-chatting by ourselves, and it was just a lot of, you know, smart remarks and, you know, dumb comments.
All right, let me stop you right there. Would you say you got into a heated exchange?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was extremely heated, but it was kind of, we weren't exactly seeing eye to eye, but we weren't ready to fight or anything like that. It was just kind of taking shots at one another.
Did you make any derogatory comments to Mario?
Yeah, nothing too crazy, But, you know, just something along the lines of, you know, you're not a tough guy. Don't talk to me like that. And he had a remark.
And what did Mario say to you?
He said, whatever I said, his rebuttal was, I make people disappear.
What did you say?
I didn't have much to say. Kind of, you didn't make me disappear, and that was it.
Unlike the other witnesses we have covered on this episode, our overall impression of Christopher's testimony was that he was telling the truth. Shane's, John's, and Alan's testimonies seemed as though they were rehearsed. They were all brief. They lacked detail. Nothing flowed. And there were inconsistencies in their testimonies. Christopher's testimony was just the opposite. His story was filled with details, and he didn't get tripped up in the cross-examination. But what does his story really prove if it is true? From our viewpoint, all it proves is that 5 years after Brian's murder, during a conversation in which two friends were chit-chatting and taking shots at one another, Mario made the comment, "I make people disappear." According to Christopher, they weren't even talking about the carrot case when this statement was made. On the cross-examination, Mario's attorney did a good job pointing out why Christopher wasn't a credible witness, even if his story was believable.
Do you sell anything besides ecstasy?
Yes.
What?
Everything under the sun.
Cocaine?
Yes.
Heroin?
No.
PCP?
Yes.
Oxycontin?
Yes.
The immunity deal given to Christopher didn't get him out of any pending charges. It merely allowed him to admit to all of his past drug offenses without being prosecuted for them. So he didn't really receive a benefit for testifying in the same way Alan and Shane did. That being said, he still may have had his own reasons for testifying against Mario.
You're not friends with Mario.
No.
In fact, you don't care for him too much, is that right?
That's fair to say.
You thought he was two-faced.
That's also fair to say.
You told Investigator McCleary that you thought he was working as a snitch on drug cases, correct?
Correct.
Christopher testified that he thought Mario was a snitch who was responsible for getting him in trouble on a previous arrest. It's possible Christopher made up the story to get back at Mario. When he spoke to the FBI, Christopher told them he only overheard Mario say, "I make people disappear." When he testified at the trial, he claimed Mario told him this directly. So there were a few reasons to doubt his testimony was true. When we started this season, we told you there were two prominent theories about what happened to Brian Carrick. One involved Mario and Shane. The other theory involved Rob. A few questions for you now that we have covered most of the evidence. Which one of these theories is supported by the forensic evidence? Which theory makes the stronger circumstantial case? Which theory is supported by credible witnesses, and which one was built on the words of four felons looking for deals? We think these questions have clear answers to them. Based on all of the evidence we have covered so far in this season of Framed, we can now say with confidence that Rob Render killed Brian Carrick. Mario and Shane weren't involved. We know Brian was killed in the vicinity of the produce cooler at Bell's. We know the approximate time when Brian was killed. We also know some of the reasons why Rob did this. Even though we have answers for the who, what, where, when, and why questions, we have yet to accomplish what we set out to do. Our goal for this season of Framed wasn't to merely figure out which of our two suspects was guilty. It was to figure out exactly what happened in the back of Vale's Foods on the night of December 20th, 2002. There are still a lot of unanswered questions we need to address. How did Rob manage to get Brian's body out of the store? And what happened next? Did someone help Rob get rid of the body that night? And if so, who? And the big unanswered question we hope one day to have the answer to, where is Brian Carrick's final resting place? Before we tackle those questions, there is another mystery that has emerged from the weeds of the case. How did this mystery become a mystery? Why did this case stymie the police and prosecutors for so long? Before 1 year had passed, the authorities knew Rob owed Brian a drug debt that was due on the night Brian was murdered. They knew Rob was the last person Brian called on his cell phone before he entered Vale's for the final time. During that phone call, Rob told Brian he wasn't going to pay him back the money he owed him for the drugs. When Brian went back to the store, he was looking for Rob. They knew Rob's blood and bloody fingerprint were found at the scene, and he exhibited suspicious behavior in the days following Brian's disappearance. Rob quit his job at Vale's. He ran away from home. He ran from the police, and when he was taken into custody, they found Brian's blood on his shoes. They had everything they needed to charge Rob with Brian's murder, but for some reason, they didn't. They sat on all of that information for years, but as soon as Alan stumbled into the Johnsburg police station, suddenly they had something they could work with. Next time on Framed, we turn our attention to the Johnsburg Police Department, and in particular, Detective Keith Von Allman. Von Allman was one of the first detectives assigned to this case. He was there when they found the bloody crime scene at Val's, and he was the one who personally placed the handcuffs on Mario when he was indicted for murder. Von Allman testified to the following at Mario's trial.
Now, you were kind of a friend of Robert Render Sr., correct?
Due to this case, you know, that's when I was really introduced to him.
So, are you saying that prior to December 20th, you did not have contact or know Robert Render Sr.?
I don't know, maybe at the gas station, you know? He was a patron there, and obviously if I was on duty, maybe he would start up a conversation.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Framed ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.